Hello and welcome to episode 44 of Dynasty's Child, Dynasty Guru's Fantasy Baseball Podcast. A little departure from the norm here. We have a special episode for all you guys. Our very own Jesse Roach has been kind enough to join me. I am your host, Keaton DeRocher, and we're going to go over the very newly released, just came out yesterday, the brand new midseason top 500 list that Jesse put together. So, Jesse, thanks for putting that together, and thanks for joining me. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. So, would you like to give yourself a shout-out on where people can find you on Twitter and any other plugs that you want to give out to our listeners?
The only plug really is Twitter, which is J-A-R-O-C-H-E 6. And yeah, I'm pretty active on Twitter. I'll be posting just about daily. And obviously, visit me at thedynastyguru.com, and I'll be I post articles about every week.
Awesome, yeah, great follow for all things prospects related, and on both Twitter and the Dynasty Guru. Very frequent poster on both, so. You can follow me on Twitter at KeatonTDG. You can follow this podcast on Twitter at Dynasty's Child and at Dynasty Guru for anything Dynasty Guru related. So, diving into some of these topics we have for the top 500. So, normally, the top 500 is done by Papa Brett, and the torch has been passed on to you. So, what was the transition like, kind of handing that off to you, and kind of what brought about Brett handing off the top 500 list?
Well, I think what brought it about was me volunteering as tribute for it. I have been doing lots of lists lately with prospects, and I know Brett is extremely busy with his Orchid Baseball Prospectus. So ultimately, I came to him and basically asked for his permission. And he willingly gave it, and the whole process of the list was all my doing. When I finished it, I handed it off to him to review and provide any commentary, and he was, you know, very interactive with it, and he did a great job giving me some tips on at least a few players. I dug in my heels at times, but I did relent as to a few and tweak the rankings a bit, but I think overall I feel pretty good about the rankings.
Nice. Awesome. Sounds pretty good. That was very gracious of you. I know that you you put several lists together almost on a monthly basis, so I'm sure you were well seasoned on putting together lengthy lists. So I'm curious, so how the process of putting together a top 500 of a mix of major league players and minor league players differed from your traditional lists of minor league players?
Yes, it is very different. I think it all stems from about 4 or 5 years ago when I began making my own rankings for my dynasty leagues. I would base my rankings on an evaluation system using prospect picks, as we have an annual prospect draft in those leagues. So for example, I would have evaluation for an early first round pick, right, which is normally about a top 20 prospect, and I would assign that kind of value to certain players, and I went from there. When I started writing for Dynasty Guru, I tweaked the valuation system, and I incorporated fantasy tool grades, which are kind of my own creation. They look at what is at an average type starter in a 16-team league and takes that kind of those stats and translates them to a tool. And that's described in a lot of my position-specific rankings that were posted in January and February. But over time, I started transitioning that exact type of grading system to major leaguers, and that took some time, especially for pitchers. Looking at each pitcher's repertoire, pitch by pitch, assigning grade to them, that is a very, very time-consuming process. But yeah, by the time July rolled around, most of it was in place. All I needed to do was update based upon most recent performance and what I see from these players moving forward.
Wow, so would you say that the process of starting to put together the midseason 500 started, almost at the beginning of when baseball games started this season?
Yes, I think it probably started years ago, honestly. These types of lists are an ongoing endeavor, in my opinion. You don't want to necessarily dive into them fresh and without any pre-existing opinions about players, because opinions need to be built over time. You can't just all of a sudden change your opinion about a player drastically unless there's really, really good evidence for the change in position. Obviously, there's tons of players that have made huge movement this year and have caused me and many others to change their opinions about certain tools and what you think that player might be able to do moving forward. There's tons of them. Max Muncy, for example. He's a maddening player that I still am trying to figure out fully, and his ranking was very complicated. But the process, I think when you boil it down to tools and what you expect these players to do moving forward and how that translates to scoring in a 5x5 standard league or in other leagues, it can reduce the complex nature of it.
You've kind of been talking a little bit about your process and kind of how long it took, but which piece of the process overall was most challenging to you in putting together the list?
Well, obviously for prospects, that was probably the easiest for me because I've been combing over prospect rankings and my opinions of these prospects for, just about daily, all year long. I think the most difficult for me was folding prospects into major league players. Because I know that there is a very, and I almost think there's two separate camps in dynasty leagues for how you value prospects. I know that there's people like Tom Trudeau at the Dynasty Guru who is extremely prospect-centric, in my opinion. He values prospects much more highly than I do, and more highly than most. And he has a very clear system, and it works for him. He can create dominant dynasty teams, and he has a lot of success with that. Then there's others, and there's going to be a lot of people that have been commenting already on this top 500 that say I'm too high on prospects. In my experience in dynasty leagues, prospects are very extremely valuable. Elite prospects are going to be this valuable. They're going to be way more valuable than players like Altuve. You're going to see someone like Acuna. He's going to net you Altuve plus likely in most dynasty leagues. So how can you justify not ranking him ahead of Altuve? Part of my rankings are, based on trade value. That's where they initially rose.
Compared to the preseason list, in your opinion, who were some of the biggest risers?
Well, there's been tons.
Yeah.
For me, I think that, you can break them down by hitters and pitchers, and I don't really want to necessarily talk about Jesus Aguilar or Max Muncy because they're obvious, right? For me personally, I think Jose Ramirez. He's a high-profile name. I believe, I ranked him third overall behind Mike Trout and Mookie Betts. He is such a strange player. He is him and Jose Altuve and now Ozzie Albies. They are showing that in the modern baseball, raw power doesn't really matter as much as it used to. We're seeing play it used to. We're seeing players like him who are grades. And people are already saying that about Nick Madrigal. I think now it's hard not to buy in to that power that he has. And, you know, he already has 30 home runs. He hit another one yesterday. So for me, I'm all in on Jose Ramirez. The next big riser is Javi Baez. Now, for Javi Baez, he's been a long, long time former top prospect. He has this crazy, crazy bat speed and huge raw power, but he swings at everything and he often misses, and that's still a problem, and that's going to be an ongoing problem for him. I mean, he leads the major leagues in swing percentage at 61%. He leads the major leagues in swing and miss. Yes, he does. It's surprising because there's people like Joey Gallo and Giancarlo Stanton who have all these strikeouts, but no, Javi Baez swings and misses 18% of the time and leads the major leagues. These are big concerns, but the power is real, and you know, now he's providing even more speed. Now we're looking at a player who might be 30-30 this year, and he's, you know what, 26, eligible at second base and third and shortstop and third base. For me, I still am very concerned, and I will remain concerned until he can limit his swing and miss. But it's hard to ignore a player like that in 5x5. In other formats, I would definitely ding him. You know, on base percentage formats, in formats that are 7x7, 8x8. You know, when you're more categories you incorporate, the more I would reduce him, lower him in the rankings. But in 5x5, he's a stud. Another one is similar is Trevor Story. But unlike Baez, Trevor Story, surprisingly, really doesn't swing and miss that much. He only swings and misses about 11% of the time. You know, I'm much more confident in his hit tool moving forward. And I think he can chip in double-digit stolen bases. And the power, of course, is huge. And he plays in Colorado and at shortstop. So we're looking at a player who looks legit to me. I mean, based on everything he's done, I think he's here to stay. And he's a good defender. You know, this is a long-term shortstop playing for Colorado with huge power, some speed, and he actually can provide pretty good batting average now. As for pitchers, and I'll touch on this, I know that time is a little limited, but obviously Blake Snell. Blake Snell is having obviously a huge year. My problems remain the same, though, because he has below average command and control. I mean, you can just look at his FIP, and it's what, 3.41? But it's really hard to ignore his four-pitch repertoire. You know, they are arguably all plus pitches. It's deep and electric. You know, if he can further improve his control, which he has over the past couple of years, you know, he could be a full-blown ace. And, you know, I know Ian would love to hear all these things.
Yeah.
But, yes, it's really true. Like Snell, Trevor Bauer's also made a lot of progress with his command. And, you know, he is, what, the potential leader of the spin rate movement in baseball right now. I mean, if you can describe him, I would say he's a crafty power pitcher. You know, he has something like 6 pitches, a four-seamer, a cutter, a two-seamer, a changeup, a slider, and a curveball. And up to four of them are playing as plus pitches already. You know, he's looking pretty dang good. I think one of the big changes for him is further incorporation of his slider. You know, last year in 2016, didn't even throw a slider. Last year, he only threw it 4.4% of the time. Now it's up to 14% of the time. It's arguably his best pitch. I think he's also legit, and he's here to stay. I'll touch briefly upon 2 control artists. Miles Mikolas, the Japanese import. You know, he has a 4.2 walk percentage. I think he has an extremely underrated repertoire. You know, he touches 95 miles an hour plus with his fastball, sits around 94 And along with that, fastball, he has a plus slider and above average curveball. You know, we're looking at a guy who has above average plus command and above average to plus repertoire. You know, all he really needs to elevate his status is to get more strikeouts and basically avoid some of those ground balls he's generating. And finally, Ross Stripling. You know, I think it's hard to ignore him. He's also similar to Mikolas. He has, what, a 3.7 walk percentage. And he also has a four-pitch repertoire with pretty outstanding secondaries. The only problem is, you know, his fastball is pretty mediocre, about 91 miles an hour. And I do foresee some regression. I mean, it's hard not to. But I also think he's legit. But those are probably the biggest risers in my mind that are also going to be players that are not likely to fall much moving forward.
Yeah. Mikolas is a guy that I wrote about for our Triple Play article, and his command really is borderline absurd. It's tremendous.
Very fun to watch.
Yeah. So, on the opposite end of the spectrum, who are a couple of the guys who were the biggest fallers?
Well, I think the obvious number one for me is Byron Buxton. I believe I listened to a pod in which Patrick was lamenting Buxton, and Buxton is the reason for why he loves Matt Olson, I believe. But you know, honestly, with Buxton, he cannot stay healthy. We're seeing injuries year to year. You know, even when he is healthy, I think his upside's a little overrated. He only really has about average game power when it's all said and done, maybe even less. And I mean, his speed is huge, and he's a tremendous defender, and he will always be highly regarded as a real life player because of his defense, because it is elite defense. But, you know, there's so much risk with that health. His hit tool is a disaster. It's a disaster. It's hard to ignore that. You know, even if he can manage to make contact, it's not going to be necessarily meaningful. So for me, Buxton's a huge faller. I actually might even be too high on him. Similar to Buxton, you know, Lewis Brinson, he was a top 20 prospect entering the season. I'm a little more confident in Brinson than I am in Buxton, actually. Brinson's also quite a good defender, underrated center fielder. The Marlins have been extremely patient with him this year, trotting him out while he's striking out most of the time. I think he is one of the league leaders in swinging strikes, 17.8%. But, you know, if that hit tool can come around a little, you know, he has legit power, above average to plus. He has good speed. I wouldn't give up on Brinson, but yes, he has fallen. Some obvious fallers are also Miguel Sanu and Domingo Santana. You know, with Sanu, it's just a huge storm of disaster this year. You know, sexual assault allegations in the offseason, knee surgery, weight issues. And when he finally arrived and was playing, you know, his performance wasn't terrible, but obviously it's not up to snuff. I do still have faith in Sanu moving forward. You know, that power is just hard to ignore. He's got huge, huge, huge power. 70 to 80 grade power. Now with Domingo Santana, well, you know, I think most people at least, saw the regression coming. There was going to be concerns about playing time. You know, there were contact issues. He also swings and misses a ton. This year, we're seeing a power outage. He's not even doing well in the minors. You know, I think he probably needs a change of scenery at this point, but his stock's fallen hard. As for pitchers, you know, there's obvious ones, but I'm going to talk about Clayton Kershaw. For me, from a dynasty perspective, it's nearing the end. I love Kershaw. He's a stud. But, you know, those back issues, Dr. Mike's talked about them extensively on our site, and I'd recommend anyone go read those, him talking about Kershaw's back. You know, they're going to be chronic. They're going to bother. It's going to bother him year to year. It's not going away. He's 30 years old. And in dynasty fantasy baseball, that is ancient. Once a player hits 30, their value starts to plummet. And I will tell you, in my experience, most of your league will not be interested in a 30-year-old. 32, you might only have four teams that have any kind of interest in a player like that. Now, with Kershaw, in addition to the back issues, he's experiencing velocity reduction. But, you know, that arm has so many miles. With the back issues moving forward, I honestly may have ranked him too highly. Next, Luis Castillo. Entering the season, I think I may have ignored a little bit his home run issues. This year, he's issued 19 home runs. He's second in baseball in allowing 18.4 home runs to fly balls. Surprisingly, you know, he throws, 95, 96 mile an hour fastball, which is the worst fastball in baseball. It's getting destroyed. I think hitters are hitting, have an ISO against him of 280 against that fastball. That is crazy. Now, I don't think that will continue. Hence, I haven't docked him too much, but it's very concerning. Despite all that, he still has tons of swinging strikes. You know, he gets 14% swinging strikes, so there's hope there, but be wary. And, you know, there's with pitchers, fallers are often injured players, so you will notice that Garrett Richards, Heaton, is not on my top 500.
I did notice, and I was wondering if you were going to bring it up.
Yes, well, you know, he is going to be undergoing Tommy John surgery. He's 30 years old. When he returns, he'll be 32. He's going to likely miss all of next year. Even when he's healthy, he's not, you know, he's a second-tiered pitcher. I do not feel confident in ranking him. I mean, if you look at pitchers like Michael Pineda and Joe Ross, you know, I think people don't quite understand or grasp how big of a deal Tommy John surgery and losing a year and a half is to a pitcher's value in dynasty leagues. Yeah, and especially for rankings purposes. I mean, if I put him on top 500, I'd have to put him on there again in April or whenever the next list is, March, February, January. But there's so many pitchers I prefer to him at this point. Similar to Yu Darvish, Danny Salazar, you know, Taijuan Walker. I actually moved Walker up on Brett's insistence. You know, I really think it's a problem. These injuries are problems in dynasty leagues. You cannot ignore them. And I don't think people fully comprehend how much of a value impact it is long term. You know, it destroys and craters trade value as well.
So was there any effect to how you ranked Ohtani with his elbow issues, or because he's 23, that doesn't have nearly the effect?
Age definitely does impact injuries. Now, he has a grade 2 UCL sprain. I am not a medical expert. Dr. Mike, I think, will be having an article coming out soon addressing this exact question. For me, it does affect him. If he were fully healthy, I would have him probably in the top 20. Due to the injury, he's dropped 31 in my rankings. And remember, I will note that ranking incorporates his dual eligibility. That's looking at him as both a pitcher and a hitter. If I was looking at him as solely a pitcher, he'd be around 52 to 60. As a DH, he's somewhere in the 200s. I have his position specific ranking. So if you do a sort on those positions, then you should be able to see where he would fall. But, you know, and the fact that he has that dual eligibility does impact his value across league settings. You know, in daily leagues, you know, he's got huge value. I mean, when he was healthy, he was a top 30 player, in at least according to ESPN's player rater. It's very unique. it's very complicated ranking a player like that. But it's really hard to ignore how he performed. I mean, he's just a special talent. And at least for now, he is hitting, so he isn't providing no value. But I think long term, he could conceivably be an elite player. He could. Now, in weekly leagues where you have to choose between Ohtani as a hitter and Ohtani as a pitcher, it does really crater his value a bit. I will say I have zero shares of Ohtani in any leagues because I was concerned about his injury and the injury reports of hit for him in the offseason. I mean, he had a sprained, I believe, UCL, and that was reported in October. And he got he received an injection to address the issue. Whether he has to have Tommy John surgery or not, we'll see. I think that if the Angels fall out of contention, we'll know at that point whether it is going to happen. Because I feel like if they fall out of contention, they're going to put him under a knife immediately if it's necessary. But we'll see. For now, I'll dock him a little bit, but I'm not prepared to dock him more. I think he is a special talent, and his upside is just huge. It's sky high.
All right, so moving on to more of a bit of a prospect focus. So looking at the rankings, we'll go through position by position, and you tell us a name to watch in the minors at each position in the rankings. So we'll start with catcher. So who's the guy in the top 500 at catcher we should keep an eye on?
Well, my top catchers at this point, you know, that I would monitor at least in the second half. There's a lot of low A mashers that I would monitor closely, like Ronaldo Hernandez, MJ Melendez, Miguel Amaya, and William Contreras. I mean, they're like they're four guys that have huge upside in low A. Just monitor them the rest of the year, see how they perform. Meanwhile, in double A, you know, what Will Smith is doing lately for the Dodgers is pretty incredible. I don't think anyone foresaw this kind of power when he was drafted. The Dodgers do a great job of getting their prospects to develop power in the minors. At least all their catchers seem to have tweaked their swings to elevate the ball more. I think Will Smith could really be a huge riser catcher. You know, I'm beginning to buy the power surge, and he's a double A. He's an excellent defensive catcher. I know that Fangraphs specifically is quite high on him. They rank him ahead of Gilbert Ruiz for what that's worth. So don't forget Will Smith in dynasty leagues. I think a lot of these old reports kind of ignore them. He's a new player now. I buy the bat. Monitor him closely in the second half. From the MLB draft, I'll talk about one guy, and it's the biggest, Joey Bart. Now, Joey Bart, I've been concerned about his hit tool from day one, and I do remain concerned. You know, he had a monster season for Georgia Tech, and he is an excellent defensive catcher. He was drafted second overall on the basis of that defense and the fact that he is going to be a legit hitter. But remember, defense doesn't matter in fantasy. I mean, the only way it matters is that it likely assures that he'll retain catcher eligibility. Now, I would monitor how he does the rest of the season. So far, between rookie Arizona League and the Northwest League, he has a 22-2 strikeout-to-walk ratio. You know, I think that that's kind of what he is. I think he's a bit of a free swinger. I mean, he showed a ton of patience in college, but a lot of that patience is due to pitchers just simply pitching around him. You know, that happens a lot in college. These huge bats, and they stand out like a sore thumb in college lineups, even in the ACC, even in these big conferences. So monitor that hit tool, monitor his plate discipline and his approach at the plate. But, you know, I mean, he could be someone like Mike Zunino, but I'm, you know, I think that's his floor. That's how, but I'm, you know, I think that's his floor. That's how good he is. You know, carries limited value. So just be wary of that hit tool moving forward.
I like Joey Bart as a guy that I talked about on a previous pod, as a guy to keep an eye on. So he's a guy that I'm definitely going to watch and monitor that hit tool. So how about first base?
All right, well, first base, I think one of the biggest risers for me is Nathaniel Lowe. He is the older brother of other Rays prospect, Josh Lowe. And, you know, I'm sure Ian will love to hear that they're going to have a potential big first base bat. I mean, I know Jake Bowers is already up there, but Nathaniel Lowe looks like he could be special. And monitor his continued transition to AA very closely. He has huge power. He's a big, big dude. We're looking at a guy who could be a 55 hit, 60 power type. I still think he's extremely underrated, and he is trending up in a big way. And for me, he is getting close to the top 100 overall. I hate to move him up that much, but I'm loving what he's doing in AA. He was a bit old for high A, so seeing his continued performance at up in the upper minors is incredibly encouraging. The other guy I would monitor in AA is Roberto Ramos. He's a first baseman for the Rockies. Obviously, whenever you have a Rockies prospect, power prospect, you want to just monitor them, period. Ramos has 25 home runs this year. He's struggling at times in AA, but he's hitting for tons of power still. Just monitor that. You know, AA is one of the only places in the Rockies, among the Rockies affiliates, that is not a bandbox. For example, their low A park in Asheville has some of the smallest and shortest fences in the entire minor leagues. So, for instance, what Chad Spanberger is doing down there, discount it heavily, because you know, that place is like a little league ballpark. those are the main two guys that I would closely monitor. From the Major League Draft, another Rockies prospect is Grant Levine. He is dominating the Pioneer League. Of course, it's the Pioneer League. It's a huge hitters league. So take his stats with a grain of salt. But we're looking at a guy who could be a 50 hitter with 60 power as a Rockies first baseman. He has draft pedigree. You know, they picked him early this year. They're going to give him a long leash, and he's going to put up some monster numbers moving forward, because he's going to be hitting in these little baby parks or in parks like Lancaster, which is their high A affiliate, which has some of the craziest winds of any minor league park, and hence their balls just fly out at stadium. But yeah, those are the main first base guys. I would just watch the rest of the second half. You know, honestly, if you can pick some of these guys up right now, I would go ahead and do it. You know, I think their upside is hard to ignore.
I think Ian will have already picked up Lowe by the time this pod comes out. He's probably jazzed about that. All right, so how about second base?
All right, well, second base, I'll talk about another Rays Lowe, Brandon Lowe. Brandon Lowe was a third-round pick out of UVA a couple of years ago, and he was always considered a pretty excellent hitter. There were questions about his defense. And, you know, you'll often see players ranked low on sites like Baseball America or Baseball Prospectus or FanGraphs because they just are not very good defenders. But for fantasy, all that really matters is that, well, is their defense good enough to get them playing time? And, you know, I think Lowe's is, and that bat could be special. What he's doing in AAA is pretty incredible. On the year between double and AAA, he's up to 20 home runs now. He's hitting 299, 396, 566. He's a patient hitter. He has 13% walk rate. He should be owned in every on-base percentage league. He's currently playing second base in left field. I think that they'll be able to find him a place for his bat. You know, he has a legit bat, and if the Rays are creative, which they are, incredibly creative, they should be able to find a way to get his bat in the lineup. Another player who I would closely monitor in the second half is, well, Brett's guy, Luis Garcia. Now, Baseball Prospectus recently released their top 50 dynasty prospects, and Luis Garcia has a pretty high ranking. I think he's in the 30s. Now, it's hard to ignore a player who's just 18 years old. He turned 18 years old 2 months ago, and he's already in high A, which is pretty incredible. But he has a limited upside, in my opinion. You know, he could be a plus hitter, which is his bat. He's got tremendous bat-to-ball skills, high contact hitter. But that power is a bit limited. You know, I would probably say it's about a 40 grade power, maybe low double digit home run type long term. His speed is also a bit limited. I don't see a ton there. You know, he gets above average grades on his speed. As players age, though, that speed declines often. I'm not exactly sure what to expect from him moving forward, but I do not think his power speed upside is enough to justify a top 50 ranking. As a concession to Brett, he snuck onto the very back end of my top 500 at 485. Brett is very high on Luis Garcia. I mean, a lot of people are. We're looking at a player who's so young, performing very well at levels that where he's easily the youngest player. But watch that upside. Finally, I guess from the draft, I'll return to the Major League draft and talk about the biggest second base name, Nick Madrigal. Like Garcia, Madrigal has this elite hit tool. I mean, he could conceivably be a 70 grade hit tool, which is crazy. And with the modern baseball and the way a lot of these hitters, these smaller hitters, are lifting the ball, you know, people think that Madrigal could even develop average power at the major league level. I'm not as convinced based on my viewings of Madrigal. You know, I don't see a ton of power there. But if he is a legit hitter, he limits strikeouts. He's a patient hitter, and he just drives the ball all over the park. You know, I see a guy who could be a potential points league monster. You know, he's players like Dustin Pedroia, for instance, were dominant forces in points leagues, and I think that Madrigal could be something similar to what Pedroia was, with maybe a little less power and a little more hit, believe it or not.
Yeah, and speaking of the limiting strikeouts, Brett actually about a half an hour ago just tweeted out that Madrigal is now up to 31 plate appearances in his professional career without a strikeout.
Yep, that is very true. And in college season, he rarely struck out. I mean, this is a guy who is going to just be an incredible contact hitter. And, you know, the contact won't be punchless. He's a legit player. And, you know, he's a good defender. I don't really think he's a shortstop. I mean, he's small. He's listed, I think, at 5'8". But he's probably 5'6". I mean, he's pretty small. And that arm strength is, I mean, it's good arm strength for size. But I think long term, it's hard to believe that he's going to be a shortstop. I'd see a second baseman all the way.
So, and then this is thinking a little bit down the road. Do you think then that Moncada moves to third?
Yes. or outfield. I mean, if you've watched Moncada at second base, I mean, he's almost lackadaisical out there. I think at times it almost looks like I just don't have a lot of faith in him long term in the middle infield. But, you know, I do still love Yoan Moncada. I think he's got pretty incredible tools. I mean, he's got huge speed and power, and I think the hit tool will eventually come around. Don't lose faith in him either.
Alrighty, so moving on to third base. Who do you got to watch over there?
One of my favorite third base risers lately is Ryan Mountcastle. I think we need to continue to monitor his approach, but so far, so good. He already has the same number of walks this year as he had all last year in 272 less plate appearances. 17 walks, to be exact. I mean, that's pretty incredible progress. He's never going to be a hugely patient hitter, but this kind of progress in his approach is very meaningful. And so far in the Eastern League, which is a pretty difficult place to hit, he's been damn impressive. He's hitting .315, .23 with 10 home runs. You know, this is a guy who could be a 55 hit, 55 power player. It's just, I think the big question is, where is his ultimate defensive home? He's got a pretty weak arm for third base. I mean, they've already given up on him at shortstop. I do think the Orioles will be patient and play him at third base some more, but I think he could eventually be destined for somewhere like left field. But I do think that bat's special, and continue to monitor him in the second half, see how his approach, you know, progresses. But for now, so far, so good. A younger guy I'm going to probably butcher this name, but Elirius Montero. he's in low A in the Midwest League. Just the other day, he blasted two home runs. I mean, he's just 19 years old. He turns 20 in August, and he's hitting .318, .374, .519 with 13 home runs in the Midwest League. You know, we're also looking at a potential 55 hit, 55 power bat. And like Mountcastle, he's a poor defender. He's not a very good third baseman at this point, but he's got to monitor closely. If he gets promoted, see how he progresses, but he could be a special bat. Finally, from the Major League Draft, one of the big names, Nolan Gorman. I actually think he's improved his dynasty stock in his brief debut. I mean, his power is crazy huge. We're talking about 70 or better grade power. And he gets to a ton of it in games already. I mean, he's already has 7 home runs in 23 games in the Appalachian League. He's hitting .302, .412, .605. And the Appalachian League's an advanced rookie league. You know, if you look at the rookie leagues, we're looking at Arizona League, Gulf Coast League, Appalachian League. Appalachian League's one of the highest. So it's almost similar in skill to some of the short season low A leagues. So what he's doing there as a teenager is extremely impressive. You know, he's a late count slugger that could hit something like 260, 270. He could have an average hit tool with huge power. And he's got, this upside is massive. So definitely look for Nolan Gorman to be rising. I think that Nolan Gorman could be a top 5 dynasty pick in prospect drafts next year. He could be even higher. So monitor how he progresses the rest of the year. Huge upside.
Yeah, he's been a fast riser, and he was a guy that Patrick was on pretty early when we did the first pod after the draft. He was a guy that Patrick had brought up on that draft as a guy he was really excited about, and that he actually had as a top 3 dynasty talent out of the draft. So Patrick was on that fast.
Yeah, I think that for Gorman, before the spring season, he was potentially going to be a top 5 pick. But during the spring, there were a lot of questions about his hit tool. He was swinging and missing a ton. And I do think that those questions remain to a point. And there were also questions about his defense. He kind of has some bad weight right now. But people do remain optimistic that he can play third base. There is a risk that he moves to first long term, and there is a risk that he becomes something like a 3 true outcome slugger, which means home run, walk, or strikeout. But you know, there's upside, tons and tons of upside. And in dynasty, a lot of times for these kind of drafts, you want to chase that.
Yeah, do you feel as comfortable with his profile at first base as you do with him at if he sticks at third?
I do. I mean, that power is huge. And if he can hit, it's going to play. It's going to play if he can make contact. And, I have more and more faith in it.
Nice. All right, so how about shortstop?
All right, well, at shortstop, I think one of the obvious names that people are going to be following closely for the second half is Wander Franco. Another name that Ian will be excited about. I think Baseball America recently ranked Wander Franco in the 20s in their updated top 100. That's a little bit rich for my taste, but he is a potentially extremely impressive bat. We're talking about a 17-year-old in the Appalachian League, utterly dominating it. He's been one of the best hitters in it all year. I mean, he looks legit to me. We're talking about a guy who could be a 55 hit, 55 power shortstop with some speed as well. But again, he is so young. He is 17 years old. There's going to be plenty of lead time. But in dynasty leagues, for me, he's a top 100 prospect now, and trending up. Big fan of Wander Franco. Another guy I would monitor, very different than Wander Franco, is Kevin Smith from Toronto. He was a draftee of college last year, so he was a 2017 draftee. He dominated low A. Now he's up in high A and continuing to dominate, showing power and speed. Ultimately, I think his tools all kind of are around average to above. He might be about above average hitter, but that power is probably about average, and his speed is borderline above. So ultimately, his upside's a little bit capped and limited, but it's hard to ignore his performance. And even with that type of upside, it's actually pretty nice, that kind of upside. And I think he might ultimately be a third baseman and not a shortstop, but that hit tool looks legit to me, and he's been performing incredibly. And he's going to be someone that I would continue to monitor his performance in high A, see how he does. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if he got promoted to double A very soon. He's definitely a riser. And finally, from the Major League Draft, I will talk about Tom's guy, Tom Trudeau's guy, Xavier Edwards. Tom is incredibly high on Edwards. I think Tom thinks Edwards is a top five dynasty pick in upcoming prospect drafts. He's got 80 grade speed. This draft has at least two players with 80 grade speed, Xavier Edwards and Jordan Adams, who I plan to talk to late about later. Now, for Edwards, this is a guy who could be an above average hitter. He's a smaller guy. I mean, he's a lean 5'10". I'm not sure if he's a shortstop long term. They're going to continue to play him there. I do think he's ultimately a second baseman, but that kind of in this modern day and age of baseball, when with stolen bases so infrequent, someone with his kind of speed, he legitimately has something like 50 stolen base upside. That kind of speed is hugely valuable in 5x5 formats. I mean, Billy Hamilton, who literally does nothing but steal bases, he doesn't contribute much in any other category, and he's still consistently a top 100 player year to year. I mean, this year, Billy Hamilton is 69th, and he's been pretty terrible. Well, he was terrible at the beginning. He's been heating up. I know Brett has very, very strong opinions about speed and speed guys, and I think it's important not to discount them. I know Patrick is very, very anti-speed. So this is not a guy for Patrick. Patrick can go after Nolan Gorman instead. But Xavier Edwards, don't ignore that speed. The hit tool is pretty good too. So he's a guy I would probably target is easy top 20 pick in prospect drafts coming up. but monitor how he does the rest of the year. So far, so good over his start in the Arizona League. I think he already has 6 stolen bases. These stats, these are only from the other day, so he may even have more by now. And that's in something like 30 plate appearances.
How about outfield?
All right, well, I have tons of outfielders to talk about, but I will try and limit it. I know I'm already being very verbose. Another guy who I love, and I drafted recently, actually, in the expert prospect draft, which you should be able to find links to at the Dynasty Guru. That included people like Tom and Brett, but also people like Eric Cross from FanTrax, Christopher Crawford from RotoWorld, James Anderson from RotoWire, and many others. It's a tremendous group of writers, great fantasy minds, prospect minds. Go check it out. Talks about tons of players. We drafted 60 players. But my second round pick was Julio Pablo Martinez, who was eligible since he signed pretty late in the spring. So far, he's been pretty good. Lately, he's heating up a ton in the Northwest League. He actually has home runs in each of his last 3 games. He's now hitting .245, .342, .490, with 6 home runs and 7 stolen bases in just 27 games in the Northwest League. I'm not really counting what he did in the Dominican Summer League. I mean, he's a man among boys in that league, so I wouldn't really look or care about those stats at all. But we're looking at a guy who could be a fast mover in the minors and a potential 5-category performer as well. 2 other guys I want to touch on before I get back to my MLB draftee. First is Corey Ray. Corey Ray is back for me. He is back. He is underrated right now. He has an underrated performance this year. He has 18 home runs and 30 stolen bases. And this is in AA. You know, this is a legit performance in the upper minors. The power and speed is for sure for real. All right. We're talking about a guy who has above average power and plus speed. I mean, he probably has double plus speed. His prospect stock is fully back for me. He's going to be moving up. I do have concerns about his hit tool still. Just like Monte Harrison, who I have even more concerns about his hit tool. But I think Corey Ray is a guy who has just massive upside from in a 5x5 perspective. Do not sleep on him. Ignore what his disastrous start to his professional career. You know, this is a guy who has prospect pedigree. He was a early first round pick a couple years ago. That power and speed is just mouthwatering. This guy, he could be a 30-30 guy at the major league level. He could legitimately be that. I'm not saying that's going to happen whatsoever, but that could happen. Next guy, who's also a power speed guy, is Buddy Reed. He was a 2016 second round pick and had an utterly disastrous start to his career. He's pretty old now. He's 23, and he was in the Cal League where he dominated it with 12 home runs and 37 stolen bases, hitting .312, .357, .522. He's been more recently promoted to Double-A San Antonio, and I would very, very closely monitor his performance the rest of the year in Double-A. If he continues to perform well, this is a guy who's going to move up fast. I think a lot of people are discounting what he did in California League because he was old for a level, and, well, it's California League. So monitor him closely and monitor that transition. I wish I was in San Antonio still to watch him play. but, oh well, I'm not. But, yes, monitor Buddy Reed. Finally, I said I would talk about him. And this is from the Major League Draft. It's Jordan Adams. Brett loves Jordan Adams. This is a raw, extremely raw, tooled-up outfielder. His stock skyrocketed during the National High School Invitational, which happens every year in late March. I got to see him a few times. The one great thing, I want to put a plug quickly for MLB Pipeline. It's an underrated source for prospect coverage. I think they're doing a great job right now. Jonathan Mayo and Callis are doing just a great job. I would follow them on Twitter. They have a lot of great free content. I mean, they have streaming stuff like the National High School Invitational, and you get to see a lot of these guys well before the MLB draft. It's very cool. But with Jordan Adams, we're talking about a guy who's 80 grade speed. It's kind of unclear where his hit and power end up landing because he's so raw. But he could have average or better hit and power. That is possible. He was committed prior to the MLB draft to North Carolina to play football as a wide receiver. And everyone thought he would go because his father is a defensive line coach for UNC. But it's hard to ignore multiple millions of dollars when you're drafted 17th overall. Remember, the Angels have had lots of success with these types of players lately. Recently, Joe Adell, who's an utter stud. But we're looking at a guy who has huge upside. And if you're chasing upside, there's not many better than Jordan Adams.
All right, and let's finish it off with some pitchers to keep an eye on.
Sure. Yeah, I think that one of the potential huge risers is Brusdar Graterol. I know that Brett's also very high on him. So far, he's experiencing a bit of a bumpy transition to high A, but we're talking about a guy who has an upper 90s fastball, legit secondaries that are continuing to develop, command and control, a lot that far better than you'd expect from a power pitcher like him. He does have top of the rotation upside. Monitor how he continues to transition to high A. I have faith, and he is moving up my rankings. Another guy who's a lot closer to the majors is Josh James. I haven't talked a ton about Josh James in my articles, partly because he's sort of been a huge riser this year, and because I'm not a huge fan of his, but I do want to touch on him now. He's in AAA right now. You know, he's 25 years old, I believe. He's been pretty dominant this year. He's one of the minor league leaders in strikeouts. He has 128 in only 80 and two-thirds innings. He's got a huge fastball and above average breaking ball. The problem with him is he doesn't really have a good changeup as of now. It shows glimpses, but it's not there. And the command and control is still a problem. He's walking tons of batters and occasionally just loses it. I think that there's a very strong relief risk here. But those strikeouts are hard to ignore. And even if he's a relief risk, we're talking about a guy who could be a late inning arm. So there is a decent bit of upside here. I would definitely continue to monitor him. And he could even receive a promotion to the majors. So see how he does the rest of the year and put him on your watch list. In the low minors, Luis Patino is a guy that I'm a decent bit. He is... In my next update, he might be making an appearance. Now, he's been dominating the Midwest League this year. He has a 2.28 ERA, a 1.11 whip, and 60 strikeouts in 51 and a third innings. He is just 18 years old, and his stuff is pretty legitimate. He has a mid-90s fastball. He has a potentially plus curveball. And he also throws a slider and changeup, which are both pretty raw. But they do, at least the changeup shows a decent bit of promise. And he has pretty good control for such a young power pitcher. I think eventually this is a guy who's could be jumping into the top 100 as soon as next year. I would definitely be looking at him in deeper leagues. For me, he's on the edge of the top 240 when I fully update it, which will be in early August. he might be making his first appearance there, so stay tuned. As for the Major League Draft, there are, of course, tons of pitchers that are very intriguing. I think it's a very deep pitching class. My favorite, other than Casey Mize, who I'm incredibly high on, I think he's a top 20 prospect. I've seen a decent bit of him. I saw a lot of him on television. He has pretty impressive command and control, above average to plus, and his repertoire is pretty incredible. He has a low to mid-90s fastball, a pretty nasty split-finger fastball or split-finger changeup, and a wipeout slider cutter-ish thing. My biggest problem with Mize is occasionally his fastball is a little flat and it gets blasted. He was struggling at the end of the year with it, in my opinion. In some of my starts, he was giving up bombs to lesser hitters. And I also think that since all of his stuff is pretty fast, I think, it's all upper 80s to mid 90s. It speeds up bats, so he needs to maybe think about incorporating something more off-speed oriented. So there is a risk in Mize's profile. But my favorite guy from the Major League Draft remains Brady Singer. He is so fiery on the mound. I think he's going to be one of those guys who plays above the sum of his parts. He does have legit tools. He has a low three-quarters arm angle, and because of that, his low 90s to mid 90s fastball runs a ton. It runs in on righties like crazy, and his off-speed stuff, his slider and change are mixed bag. I think they both flash above average. I think they do receive a lot of average grades. He does have above average command and control already. I think he's going to be a really fast mover. I am a big fan of Brady Singer, at least as a high floor guy. Yes, his upside's less than a lot of the pitchers in this draft. But with pitching prospects, look at these high floor guys that are doing so well and their values have increased so much. Joey Lucchesi, Shane Bieber, you cannot ignore high floor guys who are going to be quickly contributing in the major leagues. And I think Brady Singer is one of those guys. I would definitely think I drafted him in the third round, 25th overall in the expert prospect draft. I think that pitching always falls in these drafts and it's a rich pitching rich draft. So I definitely would target a lot of the bats early in prospect drafts, whenever you have them, either soon or already or in the spring. But among the pitchers I would definitely be going after would be Brady Singer.
My last question for you is a pitcher related. So there's a pitcher in Durham, Latham Aller, who looks like he came in at 501. Do you think he cracks the top 500 on the next iteration?
He has got some promise, that's for sure. I'm not too terribly familiar with his stuff. I do know that he is he's a pretty smooth talker, at least. I know Adam's been pushing to be ranked on one of these lists. One of these days, I might toss him on there.
I believe he even offered to pay you, so I think you better take him up on that.
Yeah, one of these days. I need to see him live in person. I need to see that arm and see it in action. I was actually a college pitcher for a D3 school, so I topped out about 85 miles an hour. Basically be batting practice fastball. I would not put myself anywhere near any of these lists. I mean, I would top 500 D3 prospect list those days.
Nice. All right. Well, thanks for joining us for part one We will get together some form of hosts and yourself for part two, where we'll go more in depth on the major league side of the top 500. So this has been a special edition of the Dynasty Child podcast. Thank you, Jesse, for joining me. You want to toss out your Twitter one more time?
Sure. Well, for one, it's been my pleasure. This is my first podcast ever, so you're popping my podcast cherry.
I hope it was enjoyable for you.
It was. But yes, please follow me on Twitter. My Twitter is JAROCHE6. I am, again, very active on Twitter. I'm pretty new to Twitter. I've only been on Twitter since January. So I'm still getting the swing of things, but I post nearly every day and usually multiple times a day.
Excellent. And the piece on the expert draft is already up on Dynasty Guru, correct?
Yes. And there's actually a link that takes you to a Google Doc that has write-ups and summaries of all of the picks, all 60 picks. From experts across the industry. I highly recommend, for one, looking at that, and for two, going and seeking out these experts. Look at their stuff. They do a lot of great stuff.
Awesome. Sweet. So I've been your host, Keaton DeRocher. You can follow me on Twitter at KeatonTDG. And I've got a bunch of stuff, mostly triple plays, but some other midseason awards and some other stuff on the Dynasty Guru. You can follow this podcast on Twitter at Dynasty's Child, at Dynasty Guru for everything Dynasty Guru related. Email us at dynastieschildpod@gmail.com. If you do us a favor, rate, review on iTunes, wherever you listen to your podcast, all that stuff helps. Thank you to Jackie Jade for our awesome logo for our rebranding. You can follow her on Instagram at jackie.jpg. And lastly, thank you very much, Caraway, for the use of our intro song, Raising the Dead, and our outro song, the last song, off their self-titled EP. You can go follow them and check them out on their website, wearecaraway.bandcamp.com. And that'll do it. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Kissing me out in the parking lot. Poisonous venom biting down on my lip. You turn and walk away with the sway of your hip. I'm so close to getting what I need, but you're so intent on making my heart bleed. So put some more Vaseline right onto your teeth. You don't want that smile sticking when you're lying to me.